Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The TNT broadcast crew has been stellar on these first two games. They're always great. And the man who called the play-by-play in both Game 1 and Game 2 is back with us, which we appreciate. He's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. He is Spiro Dita. Spiro, great job again last night. Outstanding work for you and Greg Anthony.
Gentlemen, I appreciate it. How you guys doing?
We're all right. And I thought, Spiro, last night, Cavs just played their you-know-whats off, did a great job, and then in the final 47 seconds, it's like, what the heck is this? How stunned were you about, A, the way they played up until then, and then, B, what happened then?
Yeah, it was crazy. You know, first to get the news before the game that all three of those guys would be out. We thought maybe DeAndre Hunter would at least try to play, but it tells you the severity of the injuries. We were just hoping that Cleveland would be able to compete. I mean, because those are – I mean, you talk about just having Mobley – being out is just such a massive shift in how they play. Obviously Garland, it's been evident that they need him, you know, against an Indiana team that plays with such pace. And then you throw in DeAndre, who's been so huge, as you guys know. So I was just impressed, A, that they played so well to start. I thought that the defensive adjustments that Kenny made clearly worked. I thought that they were able to dictate the pace, which is really hard to do against a team like the Pacers that just love to get out and run, and they play at that breakneck pace all the time. And then, you know, we've seen this Pacers team do this now. I mean, there's something special about this group, guys. There really is. I mean, to do what they did, I'm sure you guys saw the clincher against the Bucks. You know, to be down 7 points in overtime in the last 40 seconds and to come back and win, I mean, that's like once in a lifetime. They've now done it twice in a week. And, you know, look, it's one thing to do it against a Bucks team that's kind of one-dimensional without Damian Lillard. It's another thing to do it last night. Now, I know the injuries with Cleveland, but anyone who was in that building these last two games, I mean, that's as good an atmosphere as I've ever been in. And so to be able to do it in that moment and in that environment, just really impressed with Indiana right now.
Spiro, Tom Withers, I'm glad you brought it up. You know, I think we're underselling the Pacers, which seems to be kind of the narrative about this team almost every year. They've got a really good group with a lot of good pieces. Jeff and I were talking before, you know, Nembhard steps up last night, has 13 assists, you know, kind of, you know, defers the takes over the playmaking duties from Halliburton, who's dealing with a left wrist injury. What impresses you most about this Pacers team? Is it the depth? Is it the just the components and the way they play together?
Well, first of all, I think people need to do themselves a favor, and I know this isn't going to make people feel better in Cleveland today. You need to take that number four seed in front of Indiana and just get rid of it. This is not a four seed.
You're right.
Okay, we've been watching the NBA playoffs for years, as you guys have. There's nothing about this team that tells me they're a four seed. They can beat any team right now in the league, and I think they've proven that through the first couple of weeks of the playoffs. The thing that impresses me most is, you know, first of all, Rick Carlisle to me has long been one of the most underrated coaches in the league. And we got into it a little bit with Greg last night on the broadcast. The regular season versus the playoffs in pro basketball is maybe as drastic a shift as I think as you can make an argument for any other sport. It's just so different. And when you have a coach of Rick's ilk, I put Eric Spoelstra up there. There's obviously some really great coaches in the league. It really gives you a distinct advantage. The second thing I'll say about Indiana is every one of their guys can pass. Every one of them has great hands. And most all of the guys that Rick plays in his rotation can all shoot. And so that puts such a strain on an opposing defense. And that's what made Cleveland's defense effectiveness, you know, the first three quarters of the game last night, really impressive. But obviously they wore down. I thought Donovan Mitchell was gassed. Jared Allen looked like he was exhausted by the end of that game. And that's part of what Indiana does. They're so relentless. Even in the first part of the game when they were struggling, you know, they're still getting their shots. They're still able to find their spots on the floor. And it's just when everyone on the team can pass the ball more than anything else, I just think that really taxes the defense, and I think we've seen that so far in the series.
Spiro Dedis joining us, and he's calling play-by-play on this series for TNT, working along with Greg Anthony. The Cavs last night obviously had to overcome guys not being there. After the game, Kenny Atkinson said, if I have one regret, it might be that I didn't play more guys. Did you sense any of that, Spiro? And I agree with you. Donovan was gassed. He still kept going. Jared Allen gassed. I wonder if that's something that if these guys can't go, is Kenny going to try and go deeper, and even would that work?
Yeah, first of all, Donovan was exhausted.
Yep.
I mean, there were multiple times where we looked over and he got knocked to the floor a bunch and he took a physical beating last night. I thought that was just an amazing performance by Donovan. You know, to see him put his body on the line, I mean, the guy is just, he's brilliant. I mean, I know that the narrative is he's never gotten past the second round of the playoffs, but Greg Anthony, who's a staunch advocate for Donovan, said, I mean, people need to stop with that. I mean, anyone who's watched this guy perform in the playoffs, he's top 10 playoff scoring average. The guy's literally doing everything he can within his power. And now it's about the other guys. I mean, these other guys got to get their bodies right. And you know, if they're not inspired by what they saw from Donovan Mitchell last night, then I don't know what will. But, you know, hopefully with this extra day of rest in between these next two games, Evan Mobley will be able to play. And obviously Garland. I mean, Garland's got to be able to strap it on and give this team something. So it's a tough spot. I mean, this is as hard as it gets now because Indiana – you know, guys, again, this is one of the great environments, too. I mean, we've done a ton of games there over the years. We did a couple of playoff games last year. I mean, that place is going to be going crazy. You know, they smell the blood in the water now, and they really feel like this team, this Indiana team, has something special, bro. And so this is going to take all of Kenny Atkinson's powers. This is going to take everything that coaching staff has to really devise a game plan, because if those other three guys can't play, Cleveland's in some trouble right now. They're in some serious trouble.
Spiro, you just set up my segue perfectly. Kenny Atkinson, what does he do now going forward, game three? He's got, you know, Ty Jerome, who he really leaned on this year and was as invaluable as any player on the roster and, you know, had an unforgettable game last night, 1-for-14, just seems indecisive. Does Kenny have to shake up the starting lineup? I mean, obviously we don't know what bodies he's going to have available for game three, but does he need to do something at least with Jerome?
Well, I think you're seeing how fine a line there is in this league, guys, when, you know, you're the sixth man or, you know, you're the second guy coming off the bench and you're playing, you know, in that 20 to 25 minutes versus now you're a starter.
Right.
Now
second
you're
unit
on the floor for, yeah, you know, 30 plus minutes and there's more of a burden in terms of what you need to give the team. You know, we all love Ty Jerome. He's been a great story, super confident, had a great, great year this year. Love watching him play. But he's gotten a little exposed in the series. There's no doubt. That's a great question. I thought that he went a little deeper into his bench. Kenny did last night, And again, for three plus quarters, the game plan really kind of worked to perfection. I mean, they were up 20.
Yeah.
But I just think if there was something he could do over, maybe it's just give Donovan a little bit more rest. I thought the rotations were okay for the most part. I mean, you don't have the success that they had early in the game if the game plan was off. But I just think it comes down to those three guys. I mean, they got to use this extra day that they've got to try to get them physically ready. They may not get to 100%, but man, it's the playoffs. You know, anything you can give this team, and especially after what they saw Donovan do last night physically, I think hopefully will inspire them to at least get one of them to try to come back and help the team.
Spiro Dedis is joining us, and you can hear him. You're calling the rest of the series as well, are you not, Spiro?
No, ESPN will have game three, and then we will have 4 and 5. So okay. We'll be in Indy Sunday, and then assuming there's a game five, we'll be back in Cleveland on Monday and Tuesday.
All right, I'm looking forward to you doing those games because I've enjoyed your work along with Greg Anthony. Last night, Jared Allen was efficient could be. He had a double-double. He was 7 of 9. Game one, he was 6 of 7. Tom and I kicked around earlier. We know he's not out there for his offense. But last night, he was effective and he had 9 shots. If these guys can't go in game three, would you try to get him 12, 15 shots? Is Jarrett an offensive option here that could help this team? Or do you think he's playing the role that he should be playing?
No, I think, listen, I've been a huge Jared Allen fan for a long time, going back to his days in Brooklyn. I think he's one of the few bigs who, I don't want to say can control the game, but you can play your offense through him. The way he passes, he's got really great vision. Obviously, he's got really soft hands for a guy his size. Really nice touch around the basket. And last night, I thought he showed his offensive versatility, especially when they built that lead in the first half. Listen, if those three guys are out, I'm telling him, look, we need more than 9 shots in this next game for sure. I would love to see them try to play through him a little bit more. Anything that they can do just to take some of the burden off of Donovan's hands. Because with Donovan, it's not just that he's got to score a ton of points. It's that he's got to get guys shots. Because as Greg said this on the broadcast last night, they don't have a ton of guys who can create their own shot. Especially in this kind of situation. Because, look, regular season is one thing. Playoffs are different. You know, there's no back-to-backs. Indiana has schemed now. They've game-planned on a deep level for this Cleveland team. They know the personnel. And this is where getting separation and getting your shots is really, really difficult. So whether it's Jared Allen getting some more shots, whether it's, you know, whoever taking some of that burden, they just got to take a little bit off of the plate of Donovan because – I don't know, as amazing as he is, I don't know that anyone can sustain this level.
Spiro, we've been dissecting the final 47 seconds, as you can imagine, on a tick-for-tock basis. The Naismith follow dunk is really the play that still has people talking here. He might have been a step early in the lane. Obviously, he's still got to go 15-plus feet, though, to get to the ball and dunk it. What was your vantage point on that play? I know Kenny said that he had asked the refs if that was reviewable or not, and apparently it wasn't. And I know they disputed whether or not it was basket interference. It was almost potentially an and one in that situation as well. There was a lot of contact. What were your thoughts on that play and just the presence to even go for that in that moment?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't want to say it. It may be blasphemous, but it just reminded me of MJ doing that.
That's what we said before.
I have not seen a replay. It was just, look, my first reaction was just, holy cow. I mean, is Aaron Nesmith, to think of where he's come as a player. I remember his first couple of years, I think they took him, Boston did, just outside the lottery. And he was just kind of toiling. He was just, you know, barely a fringe rotation player there his first couple of years. And we asked Rick about him last night before the game, Rick Carlisle. And he, you know, he was just singing his praises. You know, he's someone who's grinded and to see the player that he's become now, I mean, he's as big a part of this Indiana run as Tyrese Halliburton, as Siakam, as all these other guys. And it was just a great play. I mean, in that kind of spot, to be able to make that play. Look, maybe he was in there a split second early. I'm not sure. But, you know, in a playoff game, I don't think that's a call that they're going to make. So it's just one of those deals. You know, you didn't box out. A guy made it a tremendous athletic play, and it was a turning point. I mean, again, for a team to blow a lead like that, there has to be like 6 things that go wrong. And again, all six things went wrong, and Indiana, to their credit, they cashed in, same way they did in the clinching game against Milwaukee. It's just, it was unbelievable to watch.
And you guys did a great job of calling it. Well done. Spiro Dedis from TNT joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Look forward to your work coming up in Game 4, and then we hope Game 5. Spiro, thank you.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you very much.
Thanks, Spiro.
Spiro with Greg Anthony. And again, they will be doing Games 4 and 5. ESPN sneaking one in there in Game 3.
So you have a podcast, and you really want to make money with it. Then you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. Check this out. We'll host your podcast for free. You just do your show. We'll use the power of Odyssey's massive expert sales team to place ads in your show and make you money. Does it get any easier than that? Nope. You stay in control of your show, and we help you bring in the money. Sounds like a dream partnership. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start earning more from your content today.
But talking about the atmosphere the Cavaliers will see when they get to Conseco Fieldhouse, Bankers Life Fieldhouse, whatever it's being called this year.
Gainbridge Fieldhouse.
Gainbridge Fieldhouse, yeah, thank you.
Have you ever been there?
It's a phenomenal building.
It is.
It's a phenomenal building.
Maybe my favorite.
I love it.
Yeah, it's great.
And the thing that's cool about it is that, among other things, like our arena is an absolute pit. And it's an oval, you know, where our seats are. And they're stacked.
Pit in a good way. I know what you're saying, though.
I was going to say, pit as in how it is built, not that it's
arena. No. It's our facility is great.
Fantastic.
It's amazing how well it's been maintained.
Not
over
in the
years.
Way that your mother used to walk into your room and go, "This is a pit."
It's a pit. It's a pit in this way. Seats are so close to the floor,
right. Yeah.
And then straight up.
Yeah.
In our building, you're on top of the floor. It's really good. In the field house in Indianapolis. It's kind of squared off on the corners, like in the old school field house, like in the Butler field house, and it's just a great environment. And those folks know their basketball, like our folks do.
They do.
It's really cool.
If I could interject for one second, I got spoiled. I covered the Heat Pacers series, I want to say 2011. I think it was LeBron's. Does that sound right? Yeah. LeBron's first year there, right? So the AP seat was on the baseline, and it literally made a 90-degree corner at the end of the Heat bench.
Yeah.
So I had Juwan Howard looking at my copy as I was writing it because he was the last guy on the bench. And he was interjecting.
Was he reading?
He was giving me editing and writing tips throughout the game. In fact, at one point, I can't remember who the Pacer was that had carried the ball. And Juwan said, "That guy does that on every play. Put that in your damn story."
That's funny.
Yeah, great place to watch a basketball game.
It really is. Off-season storylines just going nuts right now, by the way, with the Cavs during the season here. Browns off-season stuff, it never ends. Quarterback competition. make sure you don't miss a minute of The Fan with all of this stuff going on. Latest breaking news, everything during your workday. If you're out on the go, you can stream us at 923thefan.com. or on your phone with the free Odyssey app. I thought Spiro was outstanding. He would try to run the offense more through Jared Allen. I think that's something that might be something they have to do, especially if guys are out. We're going to touch on that in a minute. Ralph's in Mentor. Ralph, welcome.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Good.
Hey, Ralph.
Well, Jeff and Tom, I'm just wondering about officiating in the NBA as opposed to baseball and football. And is there a different set of rules in the NBA for calling fouls in the playoffs? I keep hearing, "Oh, it's the playoffs. Let them play rough." And they told Kenny, "Oh, I didn't see that. No, I didn't see that. What the hell's going on here with these officials?"
Ralph, a good voice there. I like the way you did that one. It used to be awful in the NBA playoffs. I mean, it became wrestling, and I don't believe that's the case anymore. There's maybe a little more physicality, Tom.
I would agree. It's a slower whistle as well, right? They're
let them play.
And why that becomes exacerbated last night, if that's the right word, is that you had a Cavs team that was holding on for dear life down the stretch, and they were tired and fatigued, and the Pacers took advantage of it by clutching and holding and grabbing and being as aggressive as they could be, knowing that they were going to get that slower whistle down the stretch of a playoff game. You know, Tony Brothers has not been kind to the Cavs, it feels like. And oh, by the way, does he officiate every single playoff game?
It seems
like every time I turn around,
there's Tony.
It's a Tony Brothers game.
Well, and he's one of those. He's gotten into the Angel Hernandez, CB Buckner, that whole group where you see him walk out of the floor and you're like, oh boy, we're going to have an evening. Yeah,
like Joey Crawford used to be. And not that Joey was a bad official, because he wasn't. Joey was actually a good official. But I remember back in the day, and if you remember Joey Crawford, if you were a road team, Joey Crawford was officiating your game, you knew you were going to get a fair shake. And if you were a home team, you thought, uh-oh, Joey's here. We're not going to get the home calls we're going to get.
Yeah, Tony's become kind of the new Scott Foster, too, right? Yeah. There was always that. Yeah. And then people start to figure out, okay, here's this team's record when he's officiating or not. Listen, I think on a whole, and I say this as a newly ordained basketball official.
Well.
They're the only group on the floor that is held to a standard of perfection. Now, listen, you could sit there and dissect that game last night, and there were some calls that went against the Cavs. There were some calls that went their way. I thought Donovan, you know, there were a couple calls I thought where he was awarded with free throws that I didn't necessarily think that he should have been. So that's going to balance out on a whole. Now, I just think because of the way the game unfolded down the stretch that there's a lot more scrutiny about the calls, and maybe rightly so.
I watched Joey Crawford officiate a game one time. And it was during the Cavs LeBron era with Joe Smith, Delonte West, and I love that crew.
Right.
But before the games, they used to do this whole thing where they posed for fake pictures, you know, along the bench, and somebody would be out there with, you know, just like an air camera, and they're posing and doing these pictures, and the other team is on the floor ready for the jump ball. Joey is in the center circle with the ball. And I'm sitting courtside.
I can see this right now.
I'm sitting courtside, and I said to my buddy Gary sitting next to me, I said, gee, look at this. Look at Joey. And Joey is staring down the Cavs as they're taking all these fake pictures and doing all the posing and everything else.
Right, right.
And I thought, oh, this is going to get ugly.
Yeah.
He throws the ball up for a tip within like a minute. Boom. Foul. Cavaliers. He called like three fouls in the first 2 minutes of the game, and I thought, well, they won't be taking pictures when Joey's here anymore.
Hey, and you know, in fairness to Tony Brothers too, he teed up the Pacers bench last night.
Yeah,
You know, as Spiro mentioned,
and that was a tough call.
And as Spiro mentioned during the broadcast, he was staring down that bench as well. Like, I've had enough out of you guys. Yeah. And so, you know, credit to him there. It's funny, you know, Jeff, you reminded me, and I brought this up before on the air here. That I've mentioned, and I know people don't want to hear about the Celtics today, but that Celtic City documentary on HBO is worth your time. It's really good. What they chronicle in that is the 1976 finals where referee Richie Powers fights a fan on the floor. The fan comes on the floor. It's that triple overtime game against the Suns.
Yeah.
And Richie Powers is in a swing fest with a Boston fan at midcourt. And there were also fouls in that game that you would probably be arrested for nowadays that were just like, play on, let's go.
That's so funny.
No video replay, so no funny. Nothing.
Cool Ray's in Bedford. Cool Ray, welcome, buddy.
Hey, what's up, man? I love that game, and I'm going to tell you guys why. The only reason the Cavs lost both games is because effort. And it's not saying throughout the game. It's that now people like Dean Wade, Miro, Okoro, they have to step up at the very end. The first game, when the Cavs played like crap, they still had an opportunity to pull it off. But someone had to step up. Yesterday's game, no matter how great you guys or the national media is trying to make Halliburton, game came down to an inbound. We couldn't inbound the ball. That's all it came down to. And every team played through their stars. Except the Cavs, we have technically four stars on our team. Just, you know, two of them is hurt. So I have no problem. As long as they keep playing defense, but now people like Nero, you can't go dry. I don't know what's going on with Dean Wade. He needs to start stepping up way more.
Dean took only four shots last night, and he was out there for 30 minutes. Yeah, I don't mind Dean shooting the ball. I want him to.
He's got to make the shots, especially when you're wide open. See, this is how this is how your presence affects what's going on. As long as they keep playing the defense that they're playing that they played yesterday, don't forget this team has shown the ability to win 15, 13, 12 games in a row. All they really got to do is win two games in a row to get the pressure off of them. You don't want to go down 2-1 in no way. You want to go come back 2-2 if you know, and then reset your charges. But even if you know our guys are still out, all they got to do is play the same defense, same way, and we're going to win that game. This came down to just us not – because teams are going to make runs. We've seen teams come back from 20 points down. That's not nothing new in the NBA in the three-point shot. That's nothing. So you just got to do that one – that last inch. That's what. That's the difference between winning the championship and going home. And I think they just learned that.
All right, Cool Ray.
I think I heard some optimism there from Cool Ray, right? There was a hint of it there. You know, let's get back to the late game situations have been a bugaboo for me
for some
a couple
time.
Of months now.
Yeah,
and what I feared was the Cavs didn't play in many of these types of games, did they?
They blew out a lot of teams.
They blew out a lot of teams, and it felt like the games that they were in these kinds of situations, they weren't always real sharp down the stretch. And I think back to that game in March against Orlando where they blew a lead in the final minute.
Yeah.
Same kind of problems. Inability to inbound the ball. You know, we talk about the bad pass that Strus makes late in the game. The one that sets up the Mitchell offensive foul is equally bad in terms of, now it's Donovan's fault as well. You can't throw the ball up the sideline in that situation. You're playing right into the defense's hands. So, late
and that's game, where he was called for the foul that they thought might be a flagrant.
And you know, you talk about late game situations. It's making free throws. It's boxing out. It's doing all those little things that add up to a win or a collapse.
The coaches talk about forever, and you think, man, that's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Nope, sometimes
it is.
Yeah. Yep. Joe's in D.C. Joe.
How you guys doing, man?
All right, Joe.
I just want to give a reminder. Last year, Jared Allen got hurt with bad ribs, and there was a whole lot of questions about was he tough enough? Could he have played with bad ribs? It was a whole big every time they kept saying
Marcus Morris, right?
Yeah,
he really came out later and said he should have been out there.
Right now we got all these guys hurt. Darius Garland been out for 2 weeks. Nobody is asking this. Can he really play? You know, because they need him. Obviously, like they needed Jared Allen last year. Now you got Mobley out. He may be out multiple games. Hunter out. So. You know, last year it was all about Jared Allen and his rib injury, and he could have played, he can't play. Can Darius Garland really play, or what? Nobody's really comparing it to last year playoff run when Allen was hurt compared to Darius Garland being hurt. We don't know how long Mobley and Hunter's going to be out, and also I think Amani Bates should have been on this roster. They need some points.
Joe, thanks. I'm not going to Amani Bates. He's not the answer. And I know Amani's got some fans. That's wonderful for him. But he's not the answer in this series.
He can help the charge.
216-474. Tom Withers with a shot. 0092.
Sorry, I like Amani.
He's an interesting young player, but he's not ready for the Pacers.
Nope, no,
not ready for the Pacers. Bob Finan's going to join us at noon. More of your phone calls coming up next. Plus, we have a baseball team that put up 18 runs in two games yesterday. How'd that happen? It's Baskin and Phelps. Tom Withers in for Andy today. They're just kind of floating along, Tom, and they're right there in contention, and it's early, I know that, but, you know, they might not look like much on paper, but they win baseball games.
They knocked down some threes yesterday, too, didn't they?
Didn't they, though?
Yeah. I tell you, Daniel Schneeman, wow.
What? I mean, I would want to say, what's that all about? Except he's just been really solid, and he's got five home runs now.
He's been great.
The ball.
I mean, you know, they've missed David Fry, and obviously he's on the mend, and should be back sometime in July. I think he was going to take some more aggressive at bats this week. You know, whatever they're doing with him over in Goodyear. So best to David Fry because they've missed him and they've missed that stick. But Schneeman has been terrific, and this two hole has been an issue for Vogt so far, right? He's plugged a bunch of different people in there.
Jose experiment
actually had
Jose
there for a minute. Yeah, which
work.
Was not. No, he's about as number three a hitter as there is in baseball,
I
right?
I agree.
But Schneeman's been terrific. I've still been waiting for this right field platoon situation to get worked out, and I'm not sure it's a platoon situation. It almost feels like you got to roll with one of those guys, because it seems like both of them are kind of chasing at bats and not getting comfortable.
Tom.
You know, part of me would almost rather see a Will Brennan in that spot, only because you kind of know what you're getting.
Yeah,
it doesn't seem like from bat to bat, you know what you're going to get from John Kenzie or Nolan. So
it seems like they want to get as much out of Nolan Jones as they possibly can and get a really good look. He's out of options.
Correct.
So if they do something with him,
yeah.
You know, and you brought him back. You gave up Tyler Freeman to get him. I applaud getting him back. And I remember when they got him back, my thought was, now let's see if he can do something. He wasn't necessarily the answer, but it's a trade I didn't think they should have made in the first place when they traded him away.
Right.
You didn't have enough of him, of his kind of player.
Right.
And you had plenty of middle infielders.
But if he's hitting 167, he's not going to help you, Jeff.
No, he hit the ball yesterday, hit one out.
Yeah.
But he's got to hit better than that. And, you know, despite the fact that I want a big, strong guy in the middle of that lineup who can hit the ball out, if you're hitting 167, that's not going to work.
No.
And John Kenzie's the same deal right now.
Right.
Which screams to what you said. Well, give one of them,
400 at-bats.
Yeah, and find out.
Yeah. Now, John Kenzie's the guy that, you need a 3-run homer in the 8th inning. I mean, we saw that last year in October, right? Here's your guy. But he's also going to have to, you have to deal with a lot of strikeouts and a lot of bad at bats. Doesn't walk much.
Dan, don't get mad. Goes back to even Oscar Gonzalez. You know, they don't seem to, for whatever reason, Oscar, John Kenzie Noel, Nolan Jones now, Jonathan Rodriguez.
Yeah.
You've got four guys who are the same type of guy, and not one of them has really done the job. The guy who did it the best was probably Oscar Gonzalez, and they didn't hang on to him.
Right.
But to me, Tom, the lineup screams for that kind of a hitter in the middle of the lineup, but they're just not producing.
No, and fortunately, Carlos, the calendar turned to May, and Carlos Santana is finally heating up a little bit. Had a really nice day yesterday.
Yeah.
There were some at-bats over the last couple of weeks of his where he was just a tick off. He was pulling balls foul. He knows who he is. I mean, obviously, the resume speaks for itself. So I'm not worried about Carlos. Since we mentioned it off air, we'll bring it up now. We need a Carlos Santana shorts giveaway at the ballpark.
What the heck is that?
He's got them all. He's got them rolled up about as high as you could do, doesn't he?
Yeah. I mean,
it reminds me of the White Sox in the 70s with the softball shorts, right?
Looks like he's about to go run a 5K.
It's funny you say that, because I was talking to a buddy of mine who is in his 40s and played college baseball, and he mentioned Carlos Santana, and I said something about the pants that he's wearing above the knee, and I said, it reminds me of the White Sox in the shorts, and he went, what are you talking about? And I said, the White Sox wore shorts for a short period of time. Bill Veeck was back owning the team. They wore shorts, and they had those god-awful jerseys with the collars, fake collars on them. And he said, no, they didn't. Well, I had to call it up. And look, shorts.
Terrible and great at the same time, right?
I pulled up such a
novelty.
Yeah, I pulled up a picture of Chet Lemon wearing the shorts, and I was like, oh, my God.
I would have Chet Lemon and Pat Kelly. I can envision those two guys in those uniforms
and
right
poor
now.
Poor Carlton
right?
Fisk was wearing that jersey for a while.
And those White Sox teams are pretty good, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, I digress. So this Guardians team has managed to kind of like they're hanging around, right? I mean, which is what we thought they would do. I mean,
in the division's going to run away with it. You wouldn't think.
No, I'm keeping an eye on the Royals though. I'm not sure what they did last night. I kind of lost track of what they did. They've been on a little bit of a tear lately.
They're two games out. Guardians are a game and a half.
There you go. So we're headed towards a three horse race here.
Royals
which
won
we
four straight.
Which we kind of thought would happen, right? So again, it comes down to, can you get enough quality starting pitching? That's been a little bit up and down and very inconsistent so far for Cleveland, right? The bullpen has had its mishaps here and there. I know Cade Smith had an irregular game for Cade Smith yesterday, which is bound to happen. This is what happens in baseball, right, Jeff? I mean, you can have nine good outings, and then you're going to have a bad one, and somebody's going to, connect and hit a home run or two or an extra base hit or two against you. So, yeah, the Guardians are about where I thought they would be. Good road trip for them to kind of, get their feet out underneath them a little bit better, and go forward.
Do you like a team that's, and I go back and forth, a team with a starting rotation that's built around this concept? Get me to the bullpen.
Not exactly.
I don't either. Yeah. 'Cause that's what this team feels like again this year. That's a lot of pressure to put on those guys.
It is a lot of pressure.
What, 70 appearances for four guys last year? Yeah. That's a lot.
I totally agree with that, Jeff. And that's why when people have asked me, like, what's concerned me over the first, 40-plus games now? You want Tanner Bibee and Gavin Williams to go out there every single start and give you six innings.
It'd be sweet.
Sometimes seven, right? That's how you're going to rest your guys in the bullpen, and you're not going to tax them.
Yeah.
Because we talked about that last year, Jeff. As the season was unfolding, we talked about the fact that the Guardians relievers ranked amongst, you know, four of them were like in the top six in appearances in the American League. And, oh, is that going to catch up to them in October? Kind of did.
And you wonder now. Emmanuel Clase has been working through some things this year and maybe has it figured out. Maybe did the workload get to him a little bit from last year and carry over? I have no idea.
You wonder.
Yeah, but I wonder.
Yeah, and you think about, you know, giving up those big home runs that he did against the Yankees, how, you know, what kind of carryover there would be on that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like the way – I had mentioned this the other day. I like the way Vogt handled – you know, the Clase bumpiness there for a minute, right? Mm-hmm. He kind of, you know, he didn't have a knee-jerk reaction. He didn't pull him out and automatically take him out of the closer spot. Why would you do that?
The
guy was coming off one of the great years as a reliever in baseball history. He found a way to use Cade Smith a little bit.
Brought him in a couple of safe situations.
And gave Clase a chance to kind of settle down. I thought that was really smart. Good manager.
His shoulder has a little something. Did it, or did you just need to sit him for a couple of games? Who cares? Either way, it worked, right?
Yeah. But, you know, they're playing okay, right? I mean, there's games where you wonder where the offense is going to come from, and then you get moments like Daniel Schneeman gave you in Toronto last week, right, where they're down 3-0 in the eighth inning. He hits a solo shot, then he hits a grand slam in the ninth inning. You need those kind of things to happen, right?
Last I checked, and I think it was 2 days ago, Travis Bazzano was hitting .227 in Akron. So
he's really kind of fallen on hard times for whatever reason.
After his great start.
Yeah.
And that's okay, but it just hammers home the idea that maybe he shows up this summer. Let's think about next year. In the meantime, Brian Rocchio is not swinging the bat like he did in the playoffs. I've thrown this out, Tom, and I like Brian.
I do too.
I think he's probably the long-term shortstop here. I wouldn't mind at all if the Guardians said, hey, go to Columbus, work with the coaching staff, find your swing, and you'll be back, because Gabe Arias has been just fine. Good for him. He's out of options. I mean, it was pretty much, hey, Gabe, now's the time, or you're not going to be doing it here for much longer. And then you've got...
He straightened himself out. Yeah, you're right.
You've got Schneeman, who you can play at second base. And did we expect that? Probably not, but you can play him at second base. He's been great. And you also have Angel Martinez, who's an infielder.
He's been terrific.
He's been great.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't think Rocchio gets a whole lot longer here to find it.
And Vogt alluded to that about a week and a half ago, where, you know, it was obvious that Brian had gotten to the point where he couldn't be in the lineup. I mean, I'm glad he's in there today in the nine hole, but he's got to hit better.
Yeah.
He, you know, he's got to take on, you know, kind of what you've seen Arias and the improvement in him, which is just kind of staying within himself and staying within the ball and taking that ball to right field, right? I think sometimes...
Outside pitch, hit it to right field.
Totally. I think Rocchio just got to slow himself down sometimes. He needs to have one of those 3-for-4, 4-for-5 games, get himself a little bit of confidence, and then you hope he gets going.
I like him a lot, and I certainly am not giving up on him by any stretch. In fact, I just want him to figure it out and get back here and help. Guardians against the Nationals coming up in just a little bit, and you just heard the starting lineup with Dano. Bob Finan covers the Cavaliers for the Chronicle-Telegram. Bob, great insight. Next, coming up here on Baskin and Phelps, Tom Withers is in for Andy.